Welcome to E Pluribus Unum, the podcast where we dive deeper into the hive mind. This is for episode 4, entitled Please, Carol. What are your overall thoughts on this one so far?
Overall, I enjoyed the episode. I feel like it was a blend of episode 3 and episodes 1 and 2. We get some of the mystery, but we also learn more about Carol's character, deeply, in fact. So I think it hit on all cylinders for me for a Pluribus episode, and the show has yet to disappoint.
Yeah, I agree. I think this was a really great episode. I think it rivals episode 1 in my mind as far as how much I enjoyed it. And I just wanted to highlight again here, this might be Rey Seahorn's best performance yet. And that's saying something because she's been so immaculate in the first 3 episodes, but I was just really pulled in.
I just want to point out, whomever did the animation for the title sequence did a marvelous job. And the musician that they hired to do the introductory and closing songs did a marvelous job as well. I wish we could use them for our show. And maybe we'll just have to ask permission and see if they'll let us.
Absolutely. Yeah. The opening sequence is minimalist, but there's still so much going on, and you see all these sort of nodes as they're pushing outwards in almost a signal-like fashion. I think it really works with the themes of the show and a piece of that psychic glue in action as a scientist might see it, or you see it on some sort of instrument. So very awesome, and oh boy, that opening theme song is quite catchy as well.
We have another classic cold open from Vince and his crew for this episode, and we actually get introduced to our new character from Paraguay, and we get to see his side of the telephone conversation that Carol had with him when she was on the plane. So we have Minusos Oviedo, and he is working a ham radio, and he's dialing it in on channel 7.129, and then he turns an egg timer to 2 minutes, and he waits and listens to the static. And when he doesn't get a response, he switches to the next channel. And you can see he's going through a series of channels. And he lands on 7.132, begins the egg timer, and listens. So you can see here that he is a clever person. He is trying to reach out to other people that aren't joined or whatever he thinks this situation is. Because he obviously is in the dark totally in this. And I like that a lot. He's either the manager or an owner of a storage facility in Paraguay. And you could see that he's coming down to the end of what he has for rations, and that the joined have been dropping food off at the gate for him. And he's been refusing the food, even though he's obviously starving. But what he does instead is he decides to write an apology letter to the people that own any of the items in the storage unit, to say that he needed to open them up, and he is searching for food, and he does find food technically. For me, this is a gross out scene. I watch horror films, I watch action films, but when you have a person reduced to opening up a can of dog food and eating it, and again, whomever they chose for this actor nails it, I could taste the dog food. It was just awful and gross, but he was willing to endure. And as he's dealing with this dog food situation, we now get to catch up to the point to where Carol starts her multiple calls to him, up to and including the final statement to him, where she literally says in Spanish, "Go fuck your mother, asshole," and hangs up. And I'm so pleased with his response, because it was exactly what I was hoping would happen. I could see in his face that he realized, oh, she's not one of them. So much so that he even writes her name down for what he believes he heard. And that becomes the conclusion of that cold open. So another epic cold open from the Vince Gilligan team.
Yeah, I enjoyed the cold open on this one as well. It was great to finally see Minusos as he's going about his day and encountering some of the problems that come along with how he's decided to react to the hive mind. He almost seems more skeptical and possibly even more afraid than Carol is in his reaction to the hive mind. And he treats it almost like you would a traditional virus. He isolates himself. He doesn't go near anyone. He doesn't accept the food from the hive mind, despite how delicious that looked. He's incredibly skeptical, and that drives him to open those storage units and find that dog food. And oh boy, that was a, like you mentioned, a tough scene to watch, certainly. But after he gets the call from Carol, he writes something interesting down, Laterka, Carol S. Laterka. And I did some digging on this one. There's a, quite a few different meanings in the colloquial sense as well of Laterka. The one I found that really fit it the most was given as a compliment to women when they are cunning or clever or resourceful. So it's almost him realizing that Carol, after she cusses him out, oh, this is a real person. And almost that she didn't cuss him out solely because she was angry, but possibly cussed him out so that he would recognize that. And that gives a bit of cleverness to what she did. So whether she did that on purpose or not, we'll find out. But at the very least, it got Manusos thinking that Carol could potentially be someone of the same mind as him.
Well, we watched episode 3 and I had a couple of my theories fall to the wayside. But one theory I had in the interim was, because she cursed him out, will he realize she's not part of the hive mind and will he do something different? And it looks like that's the direction they're going in, and I'm pleased with that.
And I think throughout this episode, a couple of our theories are either confirmed or denied in a pretty definite way. So that's pretty cool. I think this really brings us perfectly into the next sequence here, where we jump back in with Carol as she's leaving the hospital and she steals a sheriff's car, I believe it is, to get home.
And I'll say this too, you know, you can't steal anything anymore. Mm-mm. No one owns anything anymore. So if you want Air Force One, you get Air Force One. If you want the state police car, you just jump in a state police car and start driving. They even ask her, did you enjoy your police car? So let's add another layer to our concept here. There's no theft in the world anymore. There's no reason to steal in the world anymore. Everything is fully taken care of. And we even learn about how well they do take care of those that have suffered a little bit later on. But she jumps into the state police car and drives on down the road. Her goal is to get back home. She does, and she sees that the joined are there doing their cleanup. She allows them to do so, and we meet Larry, who is one of the folks helping out, and she calls him Shorty, which is hilarious because he's obviously 6'4", 6'5", or something like that. And even when she says, hey, Shorty, he's literally standing next to a woman that's probably about 4.5 feet tall.
Prior to her requesting Shorty comes back with her, she goes in and begins something I do quite a bit, which is a whiteboarding session. That's how I always like to throw my thoughts at the wall, literally. And the first thing that she sees across this whiteboard is the outline, or at least some ideas, of her fifth Waikaro novel. And she notably purposefully doesn't erase it as well. Whether that is it reminds her of Helen or she still sees some value in it. But the thing that was highlighted for me was in all bold letters, it said, love potion, exclamation point. And of course, a love potion is something that forces you into love with someone else. So very similar to the hive mind, I'm sure there are folks that are now forced into loving everyone and loving people outside of the hive mind as well. So certainly something to think about. And it sort of goes back to some of my ideas early on in episode 1, where, you know, they're initially transmuting this RNA sequence via saliva and kissing, and how that connection is what we utilize as humans prior to the psychic glue to connect to other people is kissing or physical affection and love. So again, just playing into those same themes of the hive mind, forced love, and what we as humans use to connect when we don't have the psychic glue. And you know, you mentioned one of my favorite guys in this episode, Larry, who she calls Shorty. There's a very subtle portion here where she calls out Shorty as well, because when we see Shorty come forward after she calls him, she says, hey, you Shorty, come here. We do see it. It is tall Larry that comes over and not the very short woman. And that signifies that now they have learned sarcasm and they understand sarcasm at this point. It's very subtle. And it was a question we had after last episode in the hand grenade. But at this point, they have learned that she said that sarcastically. And it is now the tall person as opposed to the short person that comes over. Again, something very subtle, but it's not meaningless.
I could put in there that he is the individual interacting with her more directly than even the mayor that's cleaning her driveway there. The fucking mayor, as she says. So I don't know if that's necessarily true or that they are learning or changing their ability. It could simply be that he was the one interacting with her first and they just assumed she called him Shorty and went that way. But to bounce back to your whiteboard with the Wakario notes, I noticed a handful of those things in there as well. She did hesitate to wipe the board, and I thought that was pretty cool because it could be the writer in her, it could be Helen, as you mentioned. But she pushes it off to the side to open up a new whiteboard that says, "What do I know about them?" And she goes through a list of five things. She says they are eager to please, they cannot kill, they don't play favorites, they are trying to change me, and she has this starred several times. And then five is a question, weirdly honest, ? And I think that helps a lot of folks who are watching the show tally up maybe their own thoughts, but also what Carol's thoughts are at this particular time.
That's when she procures Larry and they go back inside. And we have almost an interrogation scene here. It seems as though the purpose of this interrogation is to determine if the hive mind can lie to her.
And when we talk about the Larry interrogation sequence, she asks them, "Do you love my books?" "Yes, we love your books." "Well, do you love them as much as Shakespeare?" "Yes, we do." And she says, "That's impossible." And she starts to ask about whether Helen enjoyed her romance novels and whether Helen enjoyed her novel that is unpublished at the moment. And we discover through Larry that Helen thought that her books were harmless and that they pleased people and that it provided them with a home and a living. And she was pleased with that and that they seemed to please Carol in some way. And then when it came down to Carol's Heart of Hearts, her unpublished novel, we find out that Helen was just meh about the novel, but that they wanted her to publish it for herself so that she would have some sort of satisfaction out of it. And that's outside of the hive mind. These are the two people that knew her prior to that and wanted her to just simply be happy. So it's bittersweet. You find out that her partner didn't really much care for her writing, but was fully supportive of her career and her writing in both ways.
And it seems as though the conversation with Larry, we have the confirmation that indeed the hive mind can't lie. Even when Carol returns to the whiteboard, she writes down "can't lie" and even underscores it at that point and erases the question mark. So it's almost as if Vince Gilligan is telling us this is a hard, fast rule for this world that I've created.
But I don't know that we have hard, fast rules. I think it's more about Carol's perception of what the rules may be. I don't honestly believe that we've sussed out whether they truly can or cannot lie or will not lie for various reasons. I think they dance around it in such an interesting way that it still doesn't answer the question.
And I enjoy that this is a show that we both have our own theories on. And even if those theories are a little in opposition, it just drives the conversation forward, which is so great about anything that Vince Gilligan does. So I love that quite a bit. I think this sort of leads us back into the next sequence here where she returns to Zosia in the hospital. And we see from Ray's performance that she still feels almost sorry that this happened to Zosia. But it leads into a really interesting conversation with Zosia as well. Some of the things that they're mentioning here is the love potion that we were talking about before, or the forced integration of Carol into the hive mind eventually. And Zosia even mentions, soon enough, you'll understand everything and you'll feel much better. And that line seemed to bring up a memory of a conversion camp that her mother had sent her to, and brings up the similarities of these conversion camp counselors that were, by all means, evil people who are trying to change the core of who Carol is and integrate them into their way of seeing as well. So I thought that was a very hard-hitting conversation.
She says, in reference to the counselors at the conversion camp she went to when she was 16, and just like you, they smiled all the time.
Mm.
And, oh man, what a punch to the gut with that line. Zosia also says, we've been you, but you've never been us. And that's a fantastic line as well, even though it reminds me of Ray's line from the previous episode where she says, I don't need my drug dealer to describe the heroin to me. Meaning, I don't need the sales pitch here. And this is the third step in her thought process as we move through this episode. The first one was she has an inkling of an idea. The second one, she confirms it in the interrogation with Larry. And as we close out the hospital room scene, they do a close-up of the drip that Zosia is connected to.
And even in that scene, Carol specifically asks Zosia if the joining can be reversed. And Zosia's, I guess you can call it a non-response, we find out that she can't tell a lie, but she can also not tell the truth by simply not saying anything. Almost lie by omission seems to be the closest that they can get to deception, right? And she makes a beeline for the thiopental sodium, or for those in the know, it's considered the truth serum.
Yeah, it immediately reminded me of every film and television show that used a truth serum in their scripting. And this is sodium pentothal, essentially, which is supposed to be a truth serum, which is just a kind of a heavy barbiturate that just really takes your inhibitions and really waters them down quite a bit, allowing you to be hyper honest in some cases. Kind of like when someone gets drunk and they become a little bit too honest in the conversation. It does that, but to an nth degree, I would say, especially in this episode.
And once again, with some comedic intent in the next scene. But I do really like when she runs into the doctor in there and she very frankly asks, you guys have any heroin around here? After some coercion, the doctor agrees to procure her some unadulterated heroin, I believe he called it.
That's only 8 hours away and it's on its way. Better than Domino's, she says.
30 minutes or less, and it is always free, apparently. But this leads us into a really great scene where we find out it was a ruse and she dumps the heroin away, and instead, she's going to go about testing the truth serum on herself. And I really love how the sequence was edited in particular, where we see her inject herself and start the camera and sit down and sort of look around. And in a quick little match cut, she's instantly asleep and she's got to turn the camera back on and go through exactly what happened to her while she was going through this bout of truth serum. Some funny things and some really heart-wrenching scenes.
The sequence where she has the heroin and flushes it down the toilet immediately reminded me of Breaking Bad, because we have a scene in Breaking Bad where he has to flush some things down the toilet, and I'm pretty sure they use the same angles and everything. So I thought that was kind of a cool callback to Breaking Bad, and you've gotten us to the point to where she's now reviewing the footage of her bout with the truth serum. And as you mentioned, she does have some harrowing moments. I would say the most harrowing moment is when she breaks down and exclaims that, I miss you, I miss you. And she's talking about Helen. And she is just bawling. And it's hard for her to watch. And it's hard for us to watch. And I put myself in her role. And I'm thinking, how would I feel if I saw myself behaving in this way? And she does exactly what I would do. she fast forwards through a lot of stuff. And as we watch this fast forward footage, we see her dancing around the living room, getting food, all kinds of funny stuff. And then we'll stop and she'll be reading parts of her novel in a crazy English accent. And then it'll fast forward again and just go back and forth through maudlin and humorous scenes in this sequence here. And she decides to take the memory card and flush it down the toilet. And my thought was that memory card could survive that.
Oh, yeah.
And they could find that. And if they find that, they would see that she had tested this drug on herself to see how it works out later. That may or may not make a difference as we move on, but it was interesting to me that she wouldn't destroy it in another way, like Mr. Robot, and throw it in the microwave or smash it with a hammer. She decides to flush it down the toilet. So I wonder if that will come back to haunt her later.
Yeah, and I think she gets the confirmation that she wanted out of her experiment here with the truth serum, specifically when she fast forwards to herself talking about Zosia. And she admits, oh, Zosia's so annoying.
Yeah, she goes, she's so annoying. And the next line is, and why'd she have to be so goddamn fuckable? And I'm going to tell you this. I paused it there because I was laughing so hard. I had tears coming from my eyes. I was laughing so hard when she laid out that line, so well delivered. And it made me wonder, did they bring the pirate lady into play because they also believe that Carol might be physically attracted to her as well? And I'm going to say yes with this scene.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's something I don't think Carol would ever admit, even to herself.
Exactly. Definitely not out loud.
Yeah. This strange creature is effable, but she does. So I think that confirms to her that this experiment can work.
She says, we have a winner.
Yeah. And then we go to the next scene where she indeed is finally going to test this with Zosia in particular. And it was confirmed in the previous episode towards the end with the hand grenade scene that the hive mind is susceptible to things like alcohol. So we keep that in mind, in that this truth serum more than likely would be effective against an individual within the hive mind as well. So we do have that laid down for us already. And of course, Carol, her intent here is to inject this truth serum into Zosia to get her to open up a little bit so that she'll answer the question that she posited earlier around, can I reverse the joining? As Carol returns, she gathers Zosia out of the bed and politely asks if she would like some sun. And this is really the kindest that we've seen Carol to Zosia. It seems almost as if Carol really only shows kindness ever when she wants something in return. But Carol gathers up Zosia, and I guess I should mention that Carol injects the truth serum into Zosia's IV drip while they're going down in the elevator. And there's even a short funny scene of the Muzak in elevators. And where did that go? I never noticed it when it sort of left the zeitgeist. But yeah, whenever I'm in an elevator now, I don't hear that Muzak that I heard from my childhood.
So now we can say that the joined are not only vegetarians, they don't murder, but they also don't appreciate Muzak. So another thing to add to the joined philosophy, Muzak is out. But if you want to listen, I'll play you the song Between the Moon and New York City. But it's the Muzak version of a yacht rock song. There's comedy stacked on top of comedy here that might go over some folks' heads, but I thought that was really fantastic. But you're right. She is behind Zosia, who's sitting in the wheelchair in the elevator, and that's her opportunity to spike her IV with the truth serum. And she wheels her outside into the sunshine, and Zosia says, yes, we do enjoy the sunshine. We are enjoying this. And finally, Carol starts to interrogate her, but she's interrogating her first about the weather. And we know with the joined that they like to break down all the details. What's the barometer? What's the wind speed? Even provide Celsius and Fahrenheit for the temperature outside. And As Carol asks more and more detailed questions about the weather, Zosia starts to fade out a little bit, and Carol just becomes very insistent. You told me before that we could reverse this. How do we reverse this? And Zosia just says, no, no, no. And this is where the scene becomes very Invasion of the Body Snatchers, because we start to see people creeping out from the edges. And by creeping out, I'm saying that it doesn't feel comfortable or friendly or nice at all. No one has a smile on their face. In fact, they look like they have a scowl. Zosia is crying at this point. And Carol realizes she doesn't want to lose this opportunity as she's continuing to grill Zosia and saying, please just tell me, how do we reverse this? How do we reverse this? And she asks Zosia the question several times over. As she starts to see everybody crowd in around them, she takes a pair of handcuffs and she handcuffs herself to Zosia. And she says, you have to do what I say. Now back off. And when she says back off, the entire crowd backs up an entire step. Again, that creepy in unison symmetry that we have here. So at this point, the entire crowd of the joined around her are chanting, please, Carol, please, Carol, please, Carol, over and over again. And now you have Carol handcuffed to Zosia, Carol telling them, I have agency, you have to do what I say. And all they're saying over and over again is, please, Carol, please, Carol, please, Carol. It's extremely unnerving. It's completely the opposite in the way that they behaved before.
Yeah, a really fantastic scene and wonderfully acted, not only from our two main leads here, but the other actors that are surrounding them. It is almost something wrenched right out of a horror movie. I want to point out that Zosia's face, while they're all chanting at her, she's clearly feeling the effects of the drugs and the after effect. She's not chanting along with the crowd around them. And it seems almost as if, to me, what I sort of picked up on was, is she reverting back to an individual as well? When you inoculate somebody with, whether that's alcohol or with the truth serum here, does that wrench them farther and farther away from the hive mind? So I thought that was really interesting. Of course, there's a couple explanations for what that look on her face could actually be here. And listen, I'll say this. This isn't something I subscribe to, but it's something I want to throw out in the ether here. Are they answering her question? Where is it that pleasing Carol is going to be the way that she's able to revert them out of the joining? Not something, again, that I'm subscribing to, but it's something I want to put out there because I thought it was an interesting thought that I had. So probably not, but I think the wording in particular, please Carol, could also work as a potential answer down the road. But we see at this point that Carol's plan goes awry. And once again, we find Carol doing harm to not only the hive mind, but the closest person to her in this individual named Zosia.
You know, when we talk about Zosia's appearance in the chair while she's drugged, the thing I saw on her face was sadness.
Mm.
And so now it's the opposite of what everyone else appears to have on their face. And that's an important distinction, appears to have on their face.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sad. And I think it does lend itself to your theory. Did this drug help to break her away from the hive mind? And I'll say that we have another piece of evidence as the scene continues in that as well. So I don't think that you're quite off. I was excited in episode 2 when she lashed out at Zosia in the cul-de-sac and we saw Zosia have her first episode. And I thought in that moment, oh, again, we have a weapon here to either fight against this or perhaps reverse it. Maybe if I got angry enough, it would bounce everybody else out and just leave the person who's standing in front of me in. Now we have another instance where you introduce a drug or a truth serum. And it looks like it could be another tool potentially to pull a person out of the hive mind. Now, we're going to go into the very final scene here to maybe answer that. to remind everyone, we're completely surrounded by the joined. Their numbers continue to increase. They're all chanting with tear-stained faces, "Please, Carol, please, Carol, please, Carol." And they say, "Zosia is now experiencing a heart attack. Will you allow us to save her?"
Mm-hmm.
And again, she's presented with a question she can answer no, and they wouldn't. And she says yes. And then we see a doctor try to revive Zosia. And then the final audio that we hear is the defibrillator says, "Shock advised." And then they cut to black. So we're left with a cliffhanger as to whether, frankly, once again, is Zosia going to make it? And Carol having to endure the repercussions of the decisions that she's made in order to test her theory on the truth theorem and try to find a way to reverse the joining. Let's say a drug or an outburst does break a person out of the hive mind. The potential result is you have a Helen situation where she dies. And or we have a Zosia situation where here she could die. And is that the only way out of the joined?
Oh, interesting. So maybe if you die and are brought back, for instance, with a defibrillator, does that sever your tie at that point? That's a really interesting thought. I didn't think about that.
Well, Kiefer Sutherland thought of it years ago in a film called Flatliners.
Hell yeah, he did.
If you haven't seen it, honestly, I can't recommend it. It doesn't age well, but the concept is still fun. So yeah, we're trying a flatliner situation here. That's my final thoughts on the episode itself. Quite impressed. There wasn't a waste of space, time, or word. And I thought that they delivered enough of the mystery and enough of the backstory with Carol that this may be possibly a perfect episode.
I gotta agree with you. It was lean, mean, and it answered a lot of questions for us and maybe posited even more questions for us. So another great one.
Well, I want to also point out my favorite revelation for me in this that you revealed where she says, "Please, Carol." And is it them imploring her to please allow us to do something or please stop? And you're more saying, no, it's actually we're here to please Carol. And both answers are terrifying.
It's something to think about, certainly. Something I didn't agree with, I think, and I probably still don't, but it's interesting to think about. And it would be a fun to have a little kernel of truth in there.
For sure. I didn't want to dig into too many theories out there. We're pretty early on in the show and theories can go awry rather quickly. But one statement that was made by a handful of fans is they believe that she was asking the wrong questions. And when she's interrogating Larry, I at first had that same feeling. Why are you asking about your novel and whether your partner liked it or not? You have more pressing things to be asking questions about. But in reality, she was interrogating him to define where the holes were in the Swiss cheese. She's coming up with an idea of how she can conquer this. Mm-hmm. So there was that. And then the episode culminates in a couple of questions that are huge. Can you reverse this? What's going to happen if you finally get the formula right? Because again, we don't know how they're going to attempt to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And do I have a choice at that moment to go with you or not, despite your biological imperative? So I know, another fantastic episode.
Yeah. I guess what I see as the theme for this episode is posited right at the end of the cold open with La Turca, because the entire episode is about Carol being this very clever and cunning woman and incredibly skillful and resourceful woman as well. That could have almost been the title of the episode and it would have made plenty of sense.
They could have even called it Clever Girl, and that would be a reference to Jurassic Park where the guy is hunting down the two predators and he says, "Clever girl." And she's beyond clever. She's sharp. I really hope she gets at least nominated for an Emmy, but she should just land it. I can't think of many other television actors that have been nailing it on this level this year.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of E Pluribus Unum, episode 4, entitled Please Carol. If you like what we're doing here with E Pluribus Unum, Please Carol, do us a favor and check out our other podcast, Dad, You're Wrong, if you enjoy horror movies, science fiction, or fantasy. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next week.